Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS on KMOX. Happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday to you, Chris Ranji.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Seemed like you might have needed a happy Tuesday.
You have no idea.
Oh boy, huh?
Monday was just fine.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah, yeah. You seem to have a pretty narrow band, which I respect.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's never really awful.
He's always generically crappy.
Interesting. I like the combination of those words.
Wouldn't you, if you were with this every day?
Just be generically crappy?
Yeah.
I think it's because you're from Granite City.
What does that have to do with anything? Stop talking down to my people. Granite City hates you. Hates you. And I'm with them.
Or are they with you?
That's right.
That all started with a happy Tuesday.
I know. Yeah. That's great.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
That's what happens when you try to do one nice thing for me. Amy gets upset. It's kind of like when you have two kids, you give one a gift on their birthday, and the other one's like, right. Where's my gift? You know, it's not your birthday. I'm not talking about you.
Did anyone have that kind of thing?
What's that?
With a sibling? Was Big Dave Zimmerman like that?
When we were younger, yeah, I think he had a little problem whenever it was my birthday, but he grew
really?
Up with that. Yeah, a little bit.
Dang, dude.
Oh, man.
Not to call him out on the radio, but.
That's all right. You can do that to family.
So my niece, Tammy, is 6 years younger than me, and she was just old enough to walk and jog and have it be cute. So probably 1.5, something like that, 2 the most. And she, it looks like a little Thor's hammer, but it's a blow up thing with little bells mm-hmm. in it, you know. And they put that in the back of her little shorts, and when she'd run by, they'd hit it, and she'd giggle. So I remember, like, it was yesterday, and I got in trouble because I was like, I don't see what's so cute about it. And so they made me go sit in timeout. So what would happen is she would run through the living room and everyone's just applauding like it's, you know, the best thing they ever, like it's Cirque du Soleil. And then she would come out the door by me, give me a look like, and then go running back in. So, you know, this is humiliating. I'm in timeout. She's getting all the props. So in about her third time in, I tripped her, and she fell and hit her little knee on something, and still has a scar to this day. So,
wow.
Yeah. Wow, Dave.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Man.
This was last year?
Yeah. I'm pretty needy, Hayden.
I'm just trying to picture your mom put you in timeout when you're 58 years old.
Well, they say you should sit in timeout 1 minute for every year you've been alive.
Oh. Let me tell you something. Timeout sounds pretty good.
I was going to say, I'll take timeout,
sure.
Man.
Is that what the number is? 1 minute for every?
Yeah. Like a 2-year-old should not be in timeout for more than 2 minutes.
Well, then I got an hour.
That, it's just kind of mean. They don't understand.
I got almost an hour. This is great. I'll sit in a chair quietly.
Can you imagine being disciplined like my generation by timeout? They would make us pick our own honeysuckle switch. And if it wasn't thick enough, they'd go get one themselves.
My parents always threatened with that, but they never did it.
Wow, that must have been nice.
Cowards. Like, come on, yeah.
Just threats.
Yeah, okay.
Threats and timeout.
I remember my mom one time chased me around with a yardstick because she was mad at me. I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I was laughing as she was doing it, which didn't work.
Yardsticks break easy.
They do. They do.
Like, what do you think this is going to do?
Not much. How old were you?
I don't know, 25. No, I think it was. I must have been like 8 or 9.
Okay, because by then you're probably like, it's a yardstick, no big deal.
Yeah,
but the belt, no thanks.
Never got a belt.
Did you have a childhood version of generic crabby?
I was a really happy kid.
Were you?
He was. I think he was adorable as a kid, and I don't know what happened, but I mean, like every time he tells me a story about when he's a kid, it makes me just be like, oh, like forgive who he is now because he was so adorable.
I didn't become crabby until about 2006.
Oh, I was going to say 2021.
And I have no reason why.
Event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
You woke up one day and
grew
put
up.
The hat on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I know.
Grew
up. Okay. The White Sox won the World Series in 2005, and then they started being horrible.
And then I started working for them the following year.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
She just figured it out for you.
Yeah, she did. That's probably it.
There you go.
Thank you so much. I remember I got this job in Chicago, and I started in 2002, and I was just really happy all the time. And I remember vividly one of the producers like, this MF are walking in here all happy. There ain't nothing to be happy about. Why always happy? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm in a great mood. Yeah. It's 5 years later.
That's like when I first started my show and producer Tom was my producer. And he's just the nicest guy in the world. And I would try to get him to talk crap on people. And he'd be like, my palsy, I just try not to say anything that I wouldn't say to their face. And I'm like, there's something really wrong with this guy.
Ted Lasso.
Like there's someone chained in his basement, 100%. I had an interesting morning. So here at Odyssey, we have the I'm Listening deal, which is we have two things. One is what's your one thing, which is the climate, and then the other is suicide prevention. And since I lost my brother to suicide, they found out about that, and they reached out to me, and they asked me to host the I'm Listening podcast this year. So this morning I came in, and I hosted 2 one-hour podcasts. One is about men's mental health and suicide prevention with 3 guests, and the other was about the military. So I am used to being me, like, hey, I'm Dave, fiddly-doop, and these guys have no idea who I am, and it's about suicide prevention with all these guests. And so I felt like they just handed me a Fabergé egg and were like, don't break this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So first time I've been outside my comfort zone in a long time, started early this morning, didn't sleep last night because I knew I had to get up early this morning. And I think it went well, very, very well. Not so much because I was good, but because our guests were amazing. But yeah, it's been a long time since I've been really uncomfortable with doing something creative. How about you guys?
See, that's I think it happens regularly. For me, I can't pinpoint something right now, but I feel like it happens.
When you say uncomfortable, because of the topic or because you don't feel qualified or
sort of like the difference
right for
the difference between me doing DGS Live and people buying tickets because they think I'm funny.
Yeah.
That's mine to lose.
Right.
Or me having the guts to drive to Kansas City and do an open mic night and have them go, the hell is this guy talking about a monkey mask for?
Yeah.
So kind of that kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah. The difference, the times that I've been in that type of spot are when you're doing someone else's show, and you're kind of like trying to match their...
Everyone's waiting for you to suck.
Not even just that, but like, it's not, you're not just doing your show. When you're doing your show, it's whatever you want it to be. When you're doing somebody else's show, you're kind of catering to that audience. And I think that sounds similar. Like, your show, you get to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And in that setting, it's a little bit more confining because this is the topic, this is what we're doing, and it's a serious topic.
Yeah.
When I was writing, so way before I was in radio, and I had written books on like running and endurance sports, so I would speak at book signings or sometimes like a conference, and I'm fine speaking to 100, 200 people or more. But with book signings, a lot of times there are 2 people that show up or 3.
I feel
and
you.
When you're doing a 45-minute talk for 3 people because you owe it to them because they showed up and they want to hear, that's like when you just feel like your face is on fire and you don't know how to breathe or blink.
Yeah.
Woof.
Totally agree.
It's intense.
The smaller the crowd, the more uncomfortable I am.
Yeah.
I've had a few of those where I've done things like a charity thing or something else, and it's a smaller crowd than expected. I usually just go straight informal when that happens. Pull up a chair. Right. We're just going to sit and talk. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I'm going to be up at the podium or do whatever. Yeah. Like, you do that for the bigger crowds. And when it gets smaller, I think that makes it feel more normal.
Yeah.
When you get into that spot. Not every place is set up like that. You can't always do it. But
so the way I got into this whole thing is I was an advertiser. And I was advertising my divorce mediation company. And I did a lot of lives with Steve in D.C., and my friend Courtney Landrum, I'm sure she'd remember this. She was their producer back then. And so I paid a good amount of money, like more than I had, to do a big event at a hotel in Clayton and like full buffet, the whole bit, you know, hoping for maybe 100, 150 people. And I could do a seminar on divorce mediation. They forgot to promote it until the day of.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And so I got there and there was food for 150 and 2 people.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Forgot to promote it?
I never really got the straight story, but yes. Yeah, that basically... Wasn't that
the whole thing was the promotion?
It just fell through the cracks.
Okay.
And Steve and DC by then were like friends, you know, like not as good friends as we became, but friends, and they're just like, yeah, this is, we're just going to have to get through this. So...
Wow.
And I remember what made me think of it is like pull up a chair.
Yeah.
We had a ballroom, and I just went down and said between the guys, I'm like, what do you want to know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. The two people were the ones getting divorced.
like Pina Colada song.
Yeah. They went
he brought us together.
They went there independently. Yeah. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, there's no good reason to be at the hotel. Yeah, right. I'm getting divorced from you. So, yeah, so it's been an interesting day. Wow. Thank you to Andrew. He was here 8 o'clock like I was, so thanks.
It was fun. I mean, you know, relatively.
Yeah.
Fun.
Right. It was an interesting project that you should be very proud to be
I learned a lot. Yeah. Really did. Really learned a lot.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. It's a good one. I've always been happy that our company has, like, really pushed that initiative to the front.
Yeah.
And it's cool that you...
One of the guys, Alex, spent 12 years... as a mental health professional with the Air Force. And a couple of things. One, he talked about when Sergeant Alex, because he's been out for 4 months now, and he said it's so much less like changing jobs and more like Sergeant Alex died. Like, that's not me. Mm. I'm not that guy. He was two different guys. Mm. And now Sergeant Alex is just gone. And now I'm just Alex. And how weird that was. And it got very emotional because we had another guy named Dan who was a Marine for 30 years, like 6 deployments. He's the real deal, right? Just Mr. Combat. And I found out at the end of it that Alex didn't really feel like a veteran because he never saw combat. He wasn't even trained for combat. And he talked to Dan, who told him, you shut your ass up. Whether you're in combat or you're supporting combat or you're helping men and women who come back from combat with PTSD or suicidal ideations, you've earned everything. And it was we're just watching this interaction between these guys and it was amazing.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the best parts, was seeing those two have like a real honest moment.
Yeah.
Like just kind of organically.
But having never served, I never thought about that. That, okay, like one day I'll stop doing this, but I'll still be me. But when he said, I went 12 years without people referring to me as my first name, like ever.
Yeah. Right.
It was
right.
Either my last name or Sarge.
Or your rank, yeah.
Or your rank, yeah. And then one day you stop and you're like, I'm not quite sure who I am now. Yeah. So
when can we hear this?
I don't know. I would think within a couple of weeks we'll let y'all know.
Yeah. Wouldn't take long. Wasn't a lot of editing that needed to be done. Things I felt like were pretty tight. No real big giant issues. So could be within a couple of days.
Yeah. So we'll let you guys know. 123 DGS on KMWX. We have a short show today because the Billikens won and they are in the A-10 and the pregame starts at 3:15. So we will do Dave Murray at 3, get out of here at 3:15 and let you listen to the Billikens. Oh man, have you seen the rules for the Tyson Paul fight?
Are they real?
Yes. Yes, they are. Yes, it's been confirmed.
Okay, because I've seen like 6 different versions of them put out there.
What I saw that looked real is that they'll be wearing headgear and using 18 or 16 ounce gloves as opposed to 6 or 8. And people are really, really. At one point, there was something about it's Jake Paul that's fighting, right? Or whichever it is, there was something where his brother could tap in. And that was going to be like a bridge too far for most people. But evidently, the headgear and the big pillow fight gloves are real. So if you thought you're going to see Mike Tyson get in there and just beat the crap out of one of the Paul brothers.
I'm not sure that's real.
Oh, I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
I'm looking at a thing from earlier today that says that they want it to be considered a, quote, pro fight, but it's up to the Texas Boxing Commission. It's not up to the two parties involved. And according to this, they're not going to wear headgear.
De La Hoya was talking about this fight and saying that he really thinks that Jake Paul could have a chance at the heavyweight championship. Hmm. He said, now fighting a 57-year-old Mike Tyson's not the way to get there, but that if he wanted to take it seriously and start taking real fights against guys his age that were ranked, he really thought he had the stuff to be a champion.
Is he, I'm assuming if he's that good. Is he pro right now or no?
That's a good question.
He has not fought. He's fought one professional boxer.
Which was Mayweather?
No, that was Fury.
Because you know
not,
what?
Not, oh. not the big guy, oh. not Tyson Fury. Not the, or no,
Nick Fury.
Yeah, yeah.
With
Nick,
the Avengers.
Yeah, that guy. That guy.
Fury the horse from
No, he's basically fought nothing but MMA guys in a boxing match.
Yeah.
So you take these guys who are not boxers.
Yeah.
They're wrestlers. They're martial artists. They kick. They grapple. And you put them in a spot where they're not comfortable. And that's who he's fighting. I'm shocked to hear that De La Hoya would say that.
Hmm.
I mean,
is he just taking throwing shade?
Well, no. I'm. If he's that good, then why is he not fighting real boxers? Why is he not going up against people that are contenders? Why is he not working his way up the ranks? Fight the 50th ranked guy, and then the 30th ranked guy, and then the 20. Like, if he's good, that's what you do. But what he's doing, I don't know that he cares about about being a heavyweight. He's just doing what makes money, because when you fight a name, which is what all these MMA guys are in the yeah. fight world, they're names, they're people that you recognize. I don't, and the same thing with Tyson. Why is he fighting Tyson? Because they're going to get paid.
Yeah,
it's not because he wants to be a champ.
And you think about it, I understand that there are people who want to be the champion of the world so they can be the champion of the world, but a lot of people want to be the champion so they can be rich.
Yeah,
and he's cutting out the middleman.
Right, that's exactly. He gets the reward without the risk of going up against the real fighters who might beat the living crap out of him. I also think he's only 185 pounds.
Hmm.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fighting as a heavyweight at 185 pounds. You're getting murdered.
Speaking of being rich, Rach, have you seen the Trader Joe bag thing?
I have.
Oh, yeah. This is insane.
Oh, yeah.
So they're
funny.
Like $3 if you can find them at Trader Joe's, these mini tote bags that have gone viral, but now they're selling for $500 on eBay. Crazy.
Why?
Because people like them and they think they're cute. It's the hot new item, like the Stanley Cups.
So
everyone
they
went crazy for Stanley Cups.
Do they every day?
I don't know
at
the
Trader
answer
Joe's.
To that.
I saw a video today of them
what are
opening,
they made of?
Opening the doors and people are just like
no.
locusts.
Okay. So
are
I
they
saw,
like gold fiber?
No, they're just like every other basically sustainable grocery bag you've
okay,
ever seen.
Okay, so just like the little knit things, whatever.
You know those stories where you see the headline and you go, that's interesting. I'm not going to click on it because I don't care that much. I saw the thing about Trader Joe's limiting the amount of bags you could buy, and I didn't care to find out why. And so that was a couple of days ago. Well,
now
I guess
you know.
This is it.
That's
all right.
What I saw. I saw this Trader Joe bag is $500, and I'm like, huh.
Wonder what's in it. It's so expensive.
Yeah, right.
Oh, what? People are weird, man.
People are weird.
That's just weird.
Yeah.
Like, how is that a status symbol? It's a grocery bag.
It's a tiny tote.
Is it small, too? It's not even like a full size?
Yeah, it's like a mini tote bag.
Anybody that would pay $500 for that, I hate them.
What if they have $1 billion?
What if Trader Joe's is their life?
I will pay for his tombstone if his wife puts that quote on it.
Yeah.
I'm getting to that age where things are bothering me. Like, today I saw a story about caffeine intoxication and then what science says is the optimal nap. And I'm like, just drink enough coffee until you've had enough coffee and stop. No need to get caffeine drunk. And then take a nap and wake up. Like, for the love of God, why are we making life? Life is hard. Why are we making it so much harder?
What was the number on the nap?
I didn't. I pulled a Ranji. I'm like, I don't care enough to look.
So I've been told this for a long time going back to college that it was either less than 40 minutes or more than an hour and a half. Because if you're in that middle range, you're going to feel tired when you get up because you started to get toward the deep sleep, but not deep enough. So you'll feel groggy.
Mm.
Okay.
That's what I was told.
I always feel terrible.
After naps?
Yeah.
You know what?
Oh, I hate waking up from naps. Yeah.
Terrible.
Unless it's like a 4-hour nap. That's pretty good.
Insane. Like you're ready to go bite a squirrel.
Yeah. I feel like crying. I kind of feel like I have the flu. And I'm just
Amy
like...
Amy wakes up a 4-month-old.
Yeah, like, ugh.
It's true.
Yet,
9 times out of 10. It's true. But then that 10%, that one time
that you
wake up and you feel amazing...
It's
worth it, and you're always chasing it.
This is, like, napping is getting drunk/wasted to me, because I never understood how people...
Wow. Amy's like, I wake up hungover. I don't know why.
Yeah, what are you going to do tonight? Getting loose, taking a nap.
It is because I whenever, like, I used to work with this guy. I called him Young William. And whenever Young William would.
Did you say it like that, too?
Yes.
Hello, Young William.
Yes, Young William.
Colonial?
Young.
Could have been his goodly wife.
Damn.
Well, Young William would go out on Friday nights and he'd drink, right? And he'd wake up, come to work on Saturday, and he always was hungover and had a headache. I'm like, it's not worth it. That's so dumb. I never understood why people would be like, oh, it's fun partying. I don't mind having the flu the next day, basically. And for me, I think it's the getting in bed for a nap and like that feeling of falling asleep in the afternoon. It's just so amazing that it's like worth feeling like you have the flu when you wake up.
I get it. Has your family ever had to have a napping intervention with you?
Maybe. I think something's wrong with me. I'm so tired.
Well, you get up at like 4 a.m.
Yes,
every day.
We can fix this.
I think we can figure this out, Amy.
We can fix this.
Sleep more.
More pancakes. Less run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bridget, you a napper?
Not really. I mean, I can do it, but I feel kind of the same way. Usually I feel bad when I wake up, so I try to avoid it.
Not a napper. I'm the same as Amy. I have never once taken a nap and woken up feeling like, I feel good. I always feel terrible.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I got like a headache. I feel weird.
Yes.
That's how I feel time I wake up.
And I also, I can't help but feel when I take a nap, I wake up on like a Saturday or Sunday or whatever. It's like
wasted time.
I wasted the day.
Yeah.
I had a whole day off I wasted half of it zonked out.
You missed out on all those video games. Believe me, I'd do it.
I saw a story today about a guy who had his legs lengthened so he could be taller.
Yeah.
Has he got little arms?
He can barely reach his pockets. He can't reach his pockets anymore.
Yeah. They took it from the elbow to the shoulder and added it to his leg.
It sounds horrific. And the guy was 5'9".
Yeah.
Which is the average.
Yeah.
You are right down the middle average.
Yeah.
And he wanted to be 6'1", so they break your tibias, I guess.
Yep.
Tibias.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And they'd pull them apart.
And then they let it heal.
They put a space in the middle. And he said it was absolutely excruciatingly painful.
Yep.
And when asked whether it was worth it or not, because now he has a hot girlfriend figure, he wants to be 6'4".
Oh.
So he's going to do it again.
Dude.
He wants a hotter girlfriend.
Sorry.
Right. Yeah. You're not quite hot enough.
Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah, you're a 6'1". Yeah,
now he's gonna look weird because you're right.
Gonna
he's gonna be like a T-Rex. He's gonna have these really long legs, and he's gonna be like, ugh. Short arms, like alligator arms. Can't reach my pockets.
Oh man, you know.
But I would think if I am as honest as I can be, if I were a woman, I would be way weirded out that you used to be 5'9", and now you're 6'4", and your legs look real, real funny.
But also, it speaks to, like, a real insecurity.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's coming from a guy who wore a wig for 4 years.
Yeah, but that's, like,
I'm judging you.
There's nothing wrong. I mean, like, that's a simple procedure. You're not, like, breaking your legs and living through massive pain for months because you could be a little taller.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, with the Hippocratic Oath, is this pushing it? Because I understand that cosmetic surgery, but generally with cosmetic surgery, sometimes
it's cosmetic.
Yes, sometimes it's fixing things, but other times like they're not like breaking your body apart and otherwise functioning body parts to make like your legs longer. That seems like you're doing more harm than good.
Yeah. Rach, I know you're very happy with 6'1", Kurt, but if something happened and you met a guy who was 6'4", very attractive. And then you found out that he used to be 5'9". Is it an issue?
I mean, I would think it was strange, but I guess I don't see it as that different than, like, I mean, women get boob jobs. And you could say, like, why aren't you happy with your body? Why would you cut into yourself? Why would you do this? It's like, well, it's an insecurity that they wanted to do something about.
So. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why, where's that line? Because I will say the trauma to your body of a boob job versus breaking the bones, the muscles, the Achilles, everything that would have to be involved with making yourself taller feels like a different level.
No, that's a good point, because you have to lengthen the tendons. You can't just stretch. Yeah, you got to do everything.
I feel the same way about shoe lifts, which is what I lived in fear of when I had a wig, which was, what if we get close enough to be intimate and you pull this mofo off? And I would think that if you're 6'2", in your lifts, And things go well, and you get home, and you take off your clothes, and you're 5'8".
If you're Ron DeSantis, it's going to come out sooner or later.
It's going to come out sooner
or
later.
Yeah, you got to take those shoes off at some point.
Keep them on. Keep the shoes on.
He's in the shower with his shoes.
I'd rather be 5'9 than have to splain that way.
Look, all I'm saying is something tells me the white boots stay on.
That's kind of like when, that's what Costanza did. He was wearing Timberlands when he met a girl, and he refused to take them off ever. And he went to a wedding and painted them black so he could wear them with the suit. Yeah, that's it.
I get wanting to be taller. I don't get like torturing yourself to get it.
No.
No, you just
also in regular life, it just doesn't matter.
I went for the consultation for a hair transplant. So I was post wig, pre shave. And so I was kind of working the Norm Stewart, you know, like I was a monk with Gregorian chants. And I was at the gym, and a guy came up to me. He's like, "Look, this is really probably out of pocket, but I work for the Bosley Hair Institute or one of whichever it is. And if you want to come in for a consultation." So I'm like, "Oh, sure, I'm game." So I go in and they do the whole thing. And they look at my hair and they have little microscopes, you know, little Sherlock Holmes. And the guy comes out and he's like, "Well, it's kind of a first. You have enough hair on the back of your head that we could give you bangs, but then you'd have no hair on the back of your head."
Whoa.
I'm like, "Couldn't you tell this in the gym? Like, I'm too bald for a hair transplant?"
Yeah.
Thanks.
Dude.
Right. Like, you can pick a quadrant where you would have hair you could part in the middle, but the rest is just going to be...
What if it was only the back and the front, but nothing on the sides?
Yeah, then I'm Kim Jong-un.
It'd be a mullet.
Yeah. You got to start wearing this suit.
Hey, but on the positive side, you would shoot 18 holes in one in a row.
I just have to wear big earmuffs all the time, like when girls go skiing. Look at that guy's luxurious hair at the top of his... Oh, my God!
Well, maybe you could wear that beanie and just have it placed there around the perimeter of the beanie.
There you go.
Like Friar Tuck.
Didn't they used to do that for real in the 1600s? They did that on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't know what was the reason for it.
Sexy.
No, it's not.
They look so stupid.
I don't know. Samurais
like,
did
well,
that stuff too.
We're not going to get women anyway. We're monks. Let's monk it up.
We might as well look dumb.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just a sign to the rest of the normies not to kill them.
We're dressing.
Right. We're not trying to steal your women.
Yeah, we're not a threat.
That we're dressing celibate. For us now.
Look at this stupid haircut.
Yeah. That's the way we like it.
That's how we roll.
Yeah.
A few minutes shy of 2 p.m. here on KMOX. We have Billikens basketball coming up at 3:15 for you. Race, what's the 1 cent per stream deal?
So they're proposing this new deal that artists would get at least 1 cent every time someone streams their song on any streaming service, which is a little shocking that they're not even getting that at this point.
Right, that's a raise?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how it's broken down, but this is being pitched as a raise to the artists.
Wow.
Things are so different.
Yeah. I thought they were getting 1 cent. I thought, because that to me was the shocking statistic. Like, did you know they're only getting 1 cent?
You could be right.
One of the reasons
totally wrong here.
Bands are touring a lot more than they used to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they got to make the money and the tickets are more expensive, in part because of that. Also, promoters. But.
Yeah. It's tickets and merch. Like, that's basically the only way they make money, which is weird, right? Like, doesn't that feel like almost like the old days where all the music artists got ripped off by the record labels?
Now they're getting ripped off in another way.
And, by the record labels. The record labels are the ones that sold it out to the streaming companies, right?
Mm.
Crazy.
Wheels, I think this is audio, but it's about Gen X parents.
Yeah, so we don't need the audio for it. It's just a younger woman. So I think she's in Gen Z, but she's describing how her Gen X parents raised her. And she said they were strict to a degree, but they were very logical. They always explained why I couldn't do this, why I could do that. And as I'm listening to her, I'm like, dang it, that's how I did it. We did that exact same thing. We were not like, do whatever you want. But we also weren't like my parents, which were, you say, why are we doing this? Because I said so.
That's like, interesting.
We were very logic-based in how we did things. And I think that was interesting.
Call myself permissive, but logical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just curious if that rang true for any of you guys, because how your parents, were your parents like that? Or were they more like, nope, I'm the authority, I said so, that's all you need to know?
Isn't that kind of how coaching has changed a little bit?
A lot, yes.
Because you kind of have to tell people why you're doing a drill.
On the coaching stuff,
which I think
stuff,
is okay.
On the coaching stuff, I'm a big why guy. I think that's important. You should understand why somebody's asking you to do something.
Do you still punish through exercise
in
coaching?
Yes, but not like the old school way. Not like run till you puke, because it's always set up in advance, right? It's not a reaction. So the things that we would run for as punishment would be, you didn't run out of ground ball, that's one pull for the whole team. So they know in advance what gets you to run. Mm-hmm. But the running, we're going to do a lot of it anyway, even though they don't know it. Hope they're not listening, because they need to do it for conditioning.
Sure.
Like, you kind of like mesh the two. You need
well
it anyway. Yeah, so you
make them feel bad about yourself.
No. It's used as a way to get you to follow
shame.
You piece of
a simple style of play. Like, kids forget the number of outs. If you forget the number of outs, that's a pull. You're going to run for that.
What's a pull?
Like foul pole to foul pole.
Okay.
It's just a 40-second run, whatever. So you get one for each of these things.
40 seconds.
And they're not for like
some slow kids.
You never get them for strikeouts. You don't get them for making an error. You don't get them for that. It's always if you don't know like how many outs there are. It's always if you don't, if you don't pick up teammates, like they're left on the bases and you leave them hanging without their glove and stuff. You don't bring stuff out to them. So it's more about being a good teammate and playing like with a focus.
If you're a coach, would you recommend embarrassing one of your kids if they strike out?
No.
Does that incentivize them?
No.
Shaming them?
No.
You know, one time...
yelling once in a while, but not about that. You don't get yelled at for performance.
Well, I was working...
only for effort.
With the Sox, Ozzie Guillen was the manager. And there was a kid named Brian Anderson, called up
remember
first
him.
Year. Really good defensive player in center field. Couldn't hit. Lick. Great guy, though. And he was striking out a ton. And I remember in the clubhouse one day before a game, Ozzy is sitting in Brian's locker and he's eating a bowl of cereal. Mm-hmm. And Brian was in the back doing, I don't know, getting treatment or something. And he comes out to go to his locker and he sees Ozzy. And Ozzy's talking to a bunch of people. And Ozzy goes, "Hey, how come when you strike out, you don't run back to the dugout so people don't have time to go boo?"
I'm not going to lie. At the major league level, I'm totally fine with that.
That was awesome.
Don't do that to any kids,
though. And, of course, everybody laughed at him, and he's like, oh, man.
To what degree do you think any of that happens in today's MLB?
They ride each other pretty good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not riding each other, like, for fun, but, I mean, like, really... I'm going to embarrass you the way that we were embarrassed.
Oh, there's not a lot of that screamy stuff. There's not a lot of that. I mean,
they're pranks.
But like he means like the berating people.
Yeah,
like,
right.
That happens, but that usually would be just as an example. I'm trying to think of one recently, but it would be like a pitcher starts slamming. I saw a video actually recently. There was a player, Josh Donaldson, a few years ago, where he threw his bat into the dugout and he almost hit a teammate. Ooh. And the coach got right in his face and was screaming
at
him.
Makes sense.
It's mostly for things like that.
Right.
It's not going to be generally done. Grown men that make a lot of money aren't really going to stand there and take it.
Do you think for the kids we've gone too far to the logical?
I don't know about the logic is never bad. Sometimes, but I do think there are times we try to do too much for them. And that holds them back. Like, your kids get to be teenagers. You got to let them do things for themselves and learn that they're going to fail. You know, like, stop holding their hand all the time. By the time you're 12, 13, 14, you're capable of communicating with a coach on your own. You're capable of bringing your own drinks or whatever you need for the game. Because it's one of the things that we enforce is like, hey, listen, you get to the game. No more mom and dad coming to the dugout bringing you a Gatorade. You bring it with you because you got to learn to take responsibility. As a high school player, you're going to have to do that, so you need to learn it.
Do you get difficult parents?
Not that often, because you set the standard out in front. Right? Like it's part of, we have parent meetings. The program lays out, this is how we do it. Before the year, I send out an email. Hey, just a reminder, this is how we do it. And nothing ever gets contentious, really.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a quick reminder. Hey, he's supposed to bring it himself. We're trying to teach him how to be a high school player, you know, that kind of thing.
Not for real. Who's difficult?
I mean, very, very few.
I mean, no, honestly.
There have been a few, though.
No one's listening.
Yeah, there have been a few over the years, but nothing. I can't. I don't remember who they were specifically.
Jim?
No.
Got to be a Jeff.
Yeah,
no.
Jeff.
No Jeff.
Jeff with a G.
Yeah, Jeff with a G.
They're not listening, man.
Like the giraffe.
No. I can't think of one, like, specific.
Liar.
But, yeah, most of the
you
time.
You got a parent you hate.
No. Not one.
Not right now?
Never.
Come on.
I haven't had a parent that I hate. I got along with every parent. That doesn't mean we didn't disagree on certain things.
You hear how fast the one thing, he's not even thinking.
The one thing that you'll disagree on the most and that can be annoying is a parent that doesn't accurately understand who and what their player is at that moment.
Now name a player you hate.